set of keys from his pocket and glanced around briefly. Before he could slide the key into the lock, the girl who'd run from the station, Cyrus's daughter, burst from behind the truck and ran into his arms. She was about Joss's age, with hair so many colors, among them purple, blue, and pink, that Joss could barely count them all. The shorts and tank top she wore revealed bronze-tan skin. She might have been a teenager, but at the moment, she was acting very much like a scared child.
"Dad, I'm sorry. I was going to look for your friend, but there was this man, and he was acting really bizarre. It scared me. He..."
Cyrus smiled and gestured his eyes to Joss, who stood at the front of the truck, feeling unbelievably awkward. "Don't worry, I found my friend. And you did the right thing to run. There have been some dangerous people lurking about lately." Joss shifted his feet uncomfortably. He'd never been the best at lying, and had only really begun to withhold the truth from anyone since the night Cecile had been murdered. His parents had assumed it was some madman who'd killed their little girl. Joss had merely gone along with their assumption, but supporting their incorrect belief was just as bad as lying. He had a feeling he'd be telling a lot of lies from now on. The idea didn't sit particularly well in the pit of his stomach. It felt sour and achy and not at all like the cool, familiar comfort of truth. But he would do what he had to do for justice. The girl's eyes said she was both relieved and comforted by her father's presence. She looked at Joss and offered a warm smile.
"I'm Kat. What's your name?"
"Joss," he cleared his throat.
"What grade are you in?"
"I'm starting 9th this fall." She smiled then, and a peculiar welcoming sparkle entered her eyes.
"Me too."
He felt the thread of a smile edging up onto his lips, but it stopped when Cyrus caught his eye.
Nice to meet you, Kat."
Cyrus opened the driver's side door of his truck and shook his head, chuckling a bit before getting in. "Come on, you two. Abraham will be expecting us for dinner." Kat walked around and got in through the passenger door, sliding to the middle and patting the seat next to her as Joss approached. After taking a deep breath, Joss climbed in and closed the door, leaving what he had known as his life behind forever. Chapter 5. Echoes of the Night. Joss laid in his bed, his pillow wadded into a ball underneath his head. Moonlight poured in through the window, but apart from the dresser and the floor, he couldn't see much of his room. A strange darkness surrounded him, one so thick and black that it seemed almost like ink. His covers felt heavy on top of him, so heavy that he was having a difficult time breathing. The cotton fabric felt stiff and thick, and Joss was certain that if he didn't get out from under his blanket soon, he'd suffocate. A sound caught his attention, and he turned his head to look at the door, at where the noise was coming from. It was soft and steady, like a snake hissing quietly. Throwing his stifling covers off, Joss stood and moved to his bedroom door. He pressed his ear against the wood and listened. For a moment, the hissing stopped. A slight breeze blew in from the crack at the bottom of the door. The skin on Joss's feet cooled quickly and relief flooded through him. The room was just so hot he could barely stand it. He was debating opening the door to fill his room with cool air when the hissing started up again. Slowly, the sound changed from a low hiss, like someone releasing air from a balloon, to a whimpering cry. Joss opened the door and stepped out into the hall. He'd hoped for a burst of cool air on his face, but the hallway was actually hotter than his room. A bead of sweat trickled down his forehead and dripped off the end of his nose, but Joss paid it no attention. He was too focused on the sound of someone crying and the fact that it was coming from the door just down the hall from his bedroom. The cries sounded familiar, and Joss's heartbeat picked up its pace and joined the chorus of sounds around him. He shuffled quietly down the hall. By the time his hand closed over the doorknob, Joss knew who was behind that door and who was responsible for the echoes of sadness that were reaching his ears.
"Cecile? Are you okay?"
But Cecile wasn't okay. She was dead. She couldn't be here in her room, crying for him to save her. She was dead. With a deep breath, he turned the knob and pushed the door open. Cecile was lying on her bed, her eyes closed. A line of blood traced down her cheek to her pink ballerina sheets. Only something was different this time. Her chest was rising and falling, and Joss could still hear her whimpers. Cecile was breathing. Cecile was alive. He crossed the room, stretching a hand out to brush her bangs from her eyes and comfort her. When his fingertips touched her soft hair, he relaxed. She was real. And she really was alive. He patted her head and knelt beside her bed, keeping his eyes away from the bloody line that ran from her mouth. "It's okay, Cecile. Shh, everything's okay." Big, round tears spilled from her still-closed eyes and ran down her cheeks. Her voice was soft and sad.
"No, it's not, Jossie. It's not okay."
Wiping away her tears with his fingers, he leaned close, lowering his voice to as comforting a whisper as he could.
"Of course it is. Why would you say that?"
Suddenly, Cecile's eyes opened wide. Her sockets were empty black holes, soulless tunnels that went on forever into the deep, into the dark. For some reason, they reminded Joss of that thick blackness that had encompassed his bedroom. Her voice dropped into a deep, gruff tone, as if she hadn't used her vocal cords in ages.
"Because I'm dead, and it's all your fault."
Joss moved back, terrified. He screamed, but even as he did, he knew that no one would ever hear him. Cecile lunged forward, her tiny fingernails sharpened into claws. Inside her open mouth, Joss saw white, glistening fangs. Chapter 6. A Sense of Duty. Joss sat bolt upright on his seat in the truck, alarmed by something he'd seen in his dreams. He wasn't sure what it had been, but he wasn't surprised. Ever since Cecile's death, his nights had been plagued by nightmares. Nightmares that he was grateful that he could not always recall. Cyrus and Kat were looking at him, concern filling their collective gaze. It was Cyrus who broke the silence.
"Everything okay, Joss? You dozed off for a bit."
"Yeah, everything's fine."
He smiled weakly and realized the truck had stopped.
"Just a bad dream. Is this it?"
Cyrus seemed to gauge him for a moment before speaking again.
"The cabin's just around the bushes and up the hill a bit. If you can manage your bags, Kat and I will carry the groceries."
Joss scratched his head and yawned, shaking off his bad dream. He nodded.
"No problem. Sorry I dozed off."
As Kat slid out the passenger door, Cyrus leaned back inside and lowered his voice.
"It's okay. You'll need all the sleep you can get before training begins."
Joss sat up, excitement filling him. He was ready for this, and anxious to get started.
"When will it begin, anyway?"
Cyrus held his gaze for a moment, his eyes full of concern, a concern that Joss didn't understand.
"Probably sooner than you're ready for."
"When's that?"
"Well," Cyrus sighed, as if doing the math in his head, "it'll take us about 3 minutes to gather this stuff and get to the cabin, and then another 2 or 3 for Abraham to realize you're here, so I'd say you'd have about 7 more minutes of freedom left."
Joss eyed Cyrus for a moment, uncertain what to say. Cyrus was acting like Joss was heading for his funeral instead of beginning his Slayer training. He couldn't quite wrap his head around why. Cyrus laughed and patted Joss roughly on the shoulder. "Maybe 10. Kat grabbed the grocery bags from the back of the truck, and Joss moved around the side, lifting his suitcase from the rear and following Kat's confident stride around a large group of bushes.
"Is this it?" "Yeah, follow me."
Kat led the way, following what looked like something that had once been regarded as a driveway of sorts. Joss got his first look at the so-called cabin. It wasn't at all what he'd been expecting. Cabins, after all, are small, square, wooden simplicity, nestled in the two wild woods with no electricity and not a single modern convenience. At least, that's what Joss's impression had been up until he'd seen the house. What he was faced with was something that threw him completely for a loop. It wasn't so much a cabin as it was a large, pale yellow Victorian-style house with a wraparound porch. To its left stood a smaller blue house. Both were old. Neither was what he'd refer to as a cabin.
Maybe it was the fancy carved wood accents on the outside, but Joss had a difficult time thinking of either place as home to a group of slayers. Cat and Cyrus carried the bags up the path, crossing the porch of the Victorian with a familiar comfort. Joss wheeled his suitcase up to the steps, then lifted it and set it down just as Cyrus was turning the knob and pushing the door open. After he carried his bags over the threshold, Joss moved into the foyer, but didn't follow Cat into the kitchen. He was waiting in anticipation, waiting for a man he hadn't seen since the day of his sister's funeral. He listened, but the house was silent, as if it stood empty. Even the sound of Cyrus breathing beside him fell into the background as Joss listened for the sound of his uncle coming to greet him with open arms. Then, at last, Joss heard the slight creak of floorboards as someone descended the stairs. He looked up, but the face he saw belonged to a stranger, one with dark eyes and a scraggly beard. The man smiled at him and then nodded to Cyrus, who responded, "Where is he, Malik?" Malik jerked his head toward the direction Cat had moved.
"Out back, but be forewarned, he's in a mood."
Cyrus chuckled. "When isn't he?" Malik smirked and brushed past Cyrus and out the front door. After he'd gone, Cyrus turned to Joss. "Leave your suitcase and backpack here. I'll show you to your room in a minute, but first, your uncle will want to see you." Joss glanced anxiously in the direction Malik had gestured before nodding and setting his bags on the floor. Cyrus nodded, too, as if agreeing with some unspoken thing between them, and then strode down the hall, past what looked like an old sitting room on the left of the foyer, a formal dining room on the right at the end of the hall, and a small bedroom adjacent to that. Beyond that, they moved through the door that led them to the kitchen, where Cat was putting groceries away inside tall, dark cabinets. Cyrus set the bags he was carrying on the counter and nodded toward the back door. "Please close the door on your way out. It'll keep the bugs out and give you some privacy. And Joss..." Something dark and heavy crossed Cyrus's eyes then, something that hinted at a warning. "Be careful." There was a moment when Joss hesitated. It probably only lasted a few seconds, enough for an eye to blink twice or a heart to beat once. But inside that moment, there was so much significance that Joss felt as if he couldn't breathe. This was it. This signified the beginning of change in his life. It was a moment that would shape him and bring him ever closer to finding justice for Cecile. He was ready, and so excited about beginning his training that he could hardly breathe. He looked at the door and nodded to himself, ready as he'd ever be. Crossing the room, Joss's footfalls sounded heavy in his ears. He turned the knob and opened the door, then stepped inside. Sitting at the small table there on the back porch was Abraham, a newspaper in his hands, a pipe clenched between his teeth. Without looking at Joss, he removed the pipe and pointed wordlessly to the chair across from him. Joss took his seat and waited. For what? He did not know. Abraham was dressed in earth tones. Despite the fact that it was blazing hot, he wore slacks with boots, a button-down shirt and vest. He looked like a cool young Indiana Jones trapped in time. Instead of a whip, he carried a stake that was now held in a leather holster at his hip. And instead of hunting for treasure, he hunted vampires. Joss was mystified. Not a single wrinkle marred the fabric of his shirt, nor was a single hair out of place. Abraham was a perfectionist. In fact, his only flaw was the scar on his clean-shaven cheek, a 4-inch-wide crescent shape. Abraham returned his pipe to his mouth and finished reading whatever article had held his attention, then folded the paper carefully and set it on the tabletop. It was only then that he looked at his nephew. Silently, he went about emptying his pipe into a coffee can on the porch. After he was finished and had placed his pipe in its rightful place inside a leather pouch, he spoke.
"Well, you've arrived in one piece. I suppose that's something."
Joss bit the inside of his cheek and dropped his eyes to the ground, uncertain what to say exactly. He'd never spoken much to his uncle. In fact, prior to the funeral, he'd had the vaguest idea that Abraham preferred anyone's company to his. But still, they were family, There was something to be said for that. And there was something to be said for the fact that of all their family members, he'd chosen Joss to train as the next Slayer. He'd seen something special in Joss, and Joss wasn't about to let him down.
"I've been working hard nonstop to develop my skills, Uncle, and I'm ready to begin my training now. I'm ready for whatever you have in store for me."
Abraham sighed and folded his arms in front of him. Joss raised his chin again, meeting his uncle's eyes. For the briefest of moments, he'd expected Abraham to utter some words of praise to a boy who not only witnessed the death of his sister 3 years ago at the hand of a monster, but had worked hard to ready himself for training and had achieved a skill level that made him ready 5 full years early. But all Abraham said was,
"They all think they're ready. New Slayers come to us at 18 years of age, full of bravado, full of pride, and none of them are truly prepared for the tasks that await them. How arrogant of you to think that at 13 you're even moderately close to prepared. You're a boy, Joss, and it takes a man to fully train as a Slayer."
Abraham was right. Joss wasn't a man yet. McMillan men were sturdy, strong, reliable. They did not falter. They did not cry. His own father had reminded him of that many times. Joss had argued that Uncle Mike, father to Joss's cousin Henry, was nothing at all like that. Uncle Mike was kind and generous. He cried at sad parts of movies and had told Joss one summer that it was perfectly natural to be afraid sometimes. But there was no getting his dad to listen to reason. As far as he was concerned, McMillan men were one way, and Uncle Mike was decidedly another, which made him less of a McMillan somehow, less of a man. And though Joss wasn't exactly certain he agreed with those assessments, he wanted to be capable and strong and reliable for those he loved. He wanted the strength to avenge Cecile's death. Maybe that would make his father notice him again. A sinking feeling pulled at Joss's insides.
I thought you sent for me because I was ready to train.
Abraham slanted his eyes.
I sent for you because the vampire hive in this area has gotten out of control, and we have need of another Slayer. And since you're the oldest new recruit on our roster, you're it. That's all. You're not ready for anything. You're not special. You were simply born before the rest.
A lump formed in Joss's throat then, one that was difficult to swallow. He wasn't special. He was merely conveniently aged, one step above being the invisible boy. Abraham picked up the newspaper from the table and opened it, snapping the creases from its pages and dismissing his nephew.
Don't make me regret bringing you here.
With a short, simple, manlike nod, Joss turned and moved back inside the house. Wordlessly, he walked down the hallway, retrieved his suitcase and backpack, and headed upstairs. He wasn't sure where he was going. He was only sure that boys wait to be told where to go. Men find their own way, and Joss was going to prove he had what it takes. The stairs creaked beneath his feet as he ascended, one hand running along the worn wooden banister. At the top of the stairs was a door on the right with two single beds. Past that, another room, this one with a daybed. Both rooms looked occupied, as both had personal effects here and there. Across from the daybed room was a small bathroom, and past that, back towards the stairs, there were two more rooms, one with a queen bed and the other a king, both also occupied. At the end of the hall was another bedroom and a second staircase. Joss peered up the stairs, debating whether or not he should go up. A hand closed over his shoulder and Joss flinched. He turned to find Kat smiling at him.
I wouldn't if I were you.
He hadn't been all that intrigued about the space at the top of the stairs, guarded by a small wooden door, but now he was. There was something to be said about the enticement of all things forbidden, but there was also something to be said about the comfort of following the rules.
Why?
What's up there? Kat shrugged.
A meeting room or something. All I know is I was polishing the wood railing one day and got too close to the door, and Abraham almost ripped my arm out of its socket.
Joss peered up the stairs curiously at the small door.
How close is too close?
Cat chuckled and tugged his sleeve toward the small bedroom at the foot of the stairs.
Come on, your room is this way.
The room was small, painted green, and was covered in what looked like someone else's dirty laundry. Joss set his suitcase down and looked around, a little befuddled. Then Cat walked across the room and opened another door. She looked back at him and gestured inside the door with a nod.
This one's yours. You have to walk through Malik's room to get to it, but it's a nice room.
Picking up his bag again, Joss moved past Cat into a larger room with an old full-size bed and equally old furnishings to match. The patchwork quilt on the bed reminded Joss of something that his grandmother would have decorated with, and the flowing lace curtains only helped to solidify that image in his imagination. This wasn't a place for a man. It was somewhere an old lady would sleep. Cat flopped on the bed on her stomach and looked up at him.
Cyrus tells me you're Abraham's nephew and that you'll be here all summer to help out.
Joss set his suitcase down beside the dresser slowly, trying to think of the proper response. He wasn't exactly sure what Cyrus had said to Cat about him. He only knew that Cyrus had pleaded with him not to reveal to Cat the fact that they were vampire slayers.
That's why I'm here.
Cat darted her eyes to the door before dropping her voice to a whisper.
Aren't you scared?
Joss swallowed hard. He was scared. He was utterly terrified at the idea that for who knows how long, actual, real live vampires had been roaming the earth right under mankind's nose. And now he was going to learn how to kill them, to face down those horrible monsters and extinguish their life. The very idea set his hands shaking, but he couldn't reveal any of that to Cat. Besides, she wasn't talking about vampires. Joss got the feeling she had no idea that they even existed.
Scared? Why would I be scared? Of the wolves, silly. If I were going to hunt wild wolves, I'd be scared out of my mind. Why would you want to do that anyway? Those things can be dangerous, you know. And you're kind of young to be killing things, don't you think?
She shook her head and her bangs flopped briefly over her eyes before she drew them back with a finger and tucked them thoughtlessly behind one ear, not waiting for him to respond. Which was good, because Joss had no idea what to say.
Cyrus says wolves are a real problem here. That's why the state of New York hires him to come every summer with your uncle and the rest of the guys. Because if he didn't, the wolf population would go spiraling out of control. But anyway, are you hungry? Cyrus is cooking enough to feed the entire population of Timbuktu.
Joss shrugged casually, despite the fact that his stomach was rumbling loudly.
I could eat, I guess. Cool.
Cat slid off the bed and headed for the door.
I'll tell Cyrus he can count on Timbuktu plus one for dinner.
Hey, Cat? Joss cocked a curious eyebrow at her. He'd been wondering something since he'd first heard Cat speak, but had only now summoned the courage to ask about it.
Why do you call him Cyrus? Isn't he your dad? Yeah, but he's also Cyrus.
She smiled brightly.
Besides, I like his name.
He nodded, not really understanding.
Thanks for showing me my room. No problem. See you downstairs.
Once Cat had gone, Joss opened his suitcase and began unpacking, organizing his belongings in the way he supposed Uncle Abraham would, and taking more time than was needed to do it. The first thing he unpacked was a small silver frame. Inside the frame was a photo of Cecile. She was smiling, her eyes bright and happy. Joss placed her photograph on his dresser and turned back to his open suitcase with a sigh. The truth was, he was nervous now about being here, nervous and excited about beginning his training, and beyond nervous about being away from his mom and dad for the summer, despite the fact that he was now the invisible boy to them. He reached into his pocket and pulled out his cell phone, but frowned at the lack of bars indicating no signal. He was in the mountains, and his dad had warned him that getting a signal might be a problem. He made a mental note to call home later and return to the task at hand. Though organizing and reorganizing his dresser contents wasn't going to alleviate any of his stress, it did take his mind off of it for a while. From the small zippered pouch inside his suitcase, he withdrew his grandfather's pocket watch. Sitting on the grandma-style bed, he turned the watch over and over again in his hand. His grandfather had never uttered a word to him about the Slayer Society. He couldn't help but wonder how long his grandfather had been slaying. Was he still killing vampires when Joss had seen him last, just months before his funeral? And if he was here now, would he approve of the way that Abraham had just spoken to Joss? Maybe, if that's how slayers were supposed to act. Regardless, Joss missed his grandfather dearly, almost as much as Cecile. When the last shirt was folded and placed in a drawer, and the last pocket of his bag had been zipped and closed, Joss was left only with the smell of dinner wafting up the stairs from the kitchen, and the knowledge that avoiding leaving his room was no way to honor his sister. With a deep breath, Joss walked out the door and headed downstairs, his footfalls strong and sure, even though he wasn't. When he reached the table, he found one woman and seven men, including Cyrus and his uncle. Cat was nowhere in sight. Cyrus was standing near the head of the table. In case you're wondering, I sent Cat next door for a while so that we can make proper introductions. Joss, I'd like to introduce you to our team. We're a family, though a bit more on the dysfunctional side than most, I'd wager. Each of us possesses a particular skill, and we'll each be training you in our specialty over the course of the summer, so you'll spend quite a bit of time getting to know us. But why don't we begin with names? The vision to your far left, we call Patty. The brunette woman he'd referred to stood, and though she was very attractive, the expression on her face said that she took Cyrus's compliment as a dig. Her hair was pulled back in a bun, and her skin seemed dry and devoid of all makeup. Joss wondered if she was trying to erase her feminine side in order to earn the respect of her male slayer peers. It couldn't be easy to be the only woman in a group of slayers, especially when she was so pretty. With a stern nod, she looked at him with chocolate brown eyes and said,
"My specialty is stealth."
She elbowed the man next to her, the one with shaggy blonde hair and sun-kissed skin, his eyes a deep, intense blue. He looked a bit like a surfer. He smiled casually, easily, in Joss's direction.
"Hey, little brother. I'm Chaz. I'm in charge of TAC Ops, Tactical Operations, which basically means I'm the man with the plan."
The man next to him, the first person Joss had encountered when he'd entered the cabin, snorted behind cupped hands. When Chaz raised an eyebrow at him, the man acted as if he'd been innocently stroking his short, black beard. After a moment, he turned to Joss, extending his hand and shaking Joss's.
"Name's Malik. I'm the tracking specialist."
"Ash." A young-looking man, maybe in his mid-twenties, stood and shook Joss's hand. "Weapons specialist. I transport, clean, create, distribute, and invent more weapons than you can even imagine." Across the table from Ash, another man, one with pale skin, bright green eyes, and red hair, raised his hand.
"Munitions. If it calls for explosives, you call me. I'm Morgan."
Next to him, a thin man with a quiet demeanor spoke up.
"Creation, I can teach you a few things about reflexes and speed. Physical training is my focus."
That just left Cyrus and Joss's uncle. Cyrus smiled at Joss.
"Your uncle's specialty is hand-to-hand combat, and my gift is in survival. Seeking out food, sticking it out in less than desirable conditions. Think of those survivalist television shows, but without the cameras and with the worry of vampires."
Joss nodded, uncertain what he should say or do. He felt like maybe he should introduce himself, but he didn't have any idea what to say apart from the fact that he was bursting with excitement to get started already. Fidgeting some, he said,
"So, which of these skills will I be learning?"
"All of them."
Abraham plucked an apple from the bowl at the center of the table and tossed it to Joss, who caught it with ease.
"That's your dinner. You can enjoy your feast outside until Malik is ready to take you to the guard post."
Malik shot Abraham a look, one that was met with a commanding glare. For a moment, Joss was ready to hang his head and move out the door, ready to wait patiently for Malik to take him wherever he was taking him. But the rumble in his stomach and the keen irritation at being talked to like he was just a child
mingled together within him in a strange cloud that lifted him from where he was standing and moved his feet toward the pot of stew simmering on the stove. He picked up a bowl and started spooning it into the delectable-smelling mixture of beef, potatoes, and big chunks of carrots. The room had fallen silent behind him. A hand closed over his wrist and jerked it back, flinging the bowl from his grip into the wall beside the stove. Stew splattered the counter, the wall, the floor. Joss turned his eyes to his uncle and waited for him to speak. Abraham kept his tone even but stern as he released Joss's wrist.
"I said, get outside, and you can forget the apple. Your purification will start tonight. I see no reason to wait a day. You clearly lack both discipline and humility."
Creation stood.
"Not exactly following protocol, are we, Abraham? Let the boy eat. He'll need his strength for the trials he's about to begin. Without proper protein, his muscles won't be able to handle the strain."
"Besides," Malik whined, "I'm hungry. Why should I be punished for his purification?"
Several slayers shot Malik a look that said that he'd be wise to shut his mouth. Abraham stood in front of Joss, his chest heaving in anger. Abraham's gaze was heavy on Joss, weighing him down.
"Outside!"
Joss looked at his uncle. He was tired of this already, tired of being made to feel like he didn't belong, like he was a burden rather than here to help out. He hadn't been told precisely what training would entail, and so far had only experienced his uncle's insults. And he'd had quite enough of that. Maybe he was just a kid, but even a kid deserved some answers. "What is this, Abraham? Why am I here? What exactly do you want from me?" He thought for a second and then tacked on a burning question. "And what's purification?" None of the other slayers moved. Even Cyrus stood gravely still. The only sound for several seconds was that of the bubbling stew. After a moment, Abraham returned to his chair and shoved an empty seat toward Joss with his foot. Joss wanted answers, but he really didn't want to sit down. He paused, but finally relented, too curious and too hungry not to oblige. Abraham sat back in his seat and sighed.
"The world you knew before young Cecile was murdered is not the world you know now, boy. Things have changed for you, but they have not changed, not really. The world remains the same as it has always been. You just didn't know any better before, just as you seemed to be ignorant of the importance of following orders and protocol."
Joss became very still, but he could feel a strange tightening in his chest. Abraham held his gaze.
"Vampires exist. Slayers exist as well. We do the honorable work of defending mankind against their bloodthirsty desires. We eradicate them to protect the innocent. We kill them before they can kill us."
By us, Joss was fairly certain that his uncle was referring to people, all people, and not just slayers. He swallowed hard, trying desperately not to picture Cecile lying in her bed, so still and failing miserably. Abraham tightened his jaw.
"I have seen things that would make your worst nightmares seem like the sweetest daydreams. I have witnessed monsters devouring children, mothers, the elderly. And I was there the day your grandfather, my father, stood in the face of a vampire as it ripped out his throat."
Joss's heart raced. Grandpa. Killed by a vampire. Darkness closed in around him. A gloom that he couldn't escape. First Cecile. Now his grandfather. His family had been partially erased because of the fanged creatures that lurked in the night. Something in Abraham's eyes pulled back then, steering him away from the emotions that memory had stirred. His tone became all business.
"Only a slayer can recognize another slayer. And it's always somewhere in the family line, one slayer per generation. We see it in their agility, in their strength, in their unusual gifts. I first noticed your gifts when you were 5. You could outrun any child in your neighborhood. You could outrun your own parents. And you never tired. Then when you were 8, I saw it again when you took an archery class. You hit the center more than any child of that age should be capable. I knew then you were a slayer, even though I wished many times that you weren't. Your cousin, Greg, now he would have made an excellent slayer. Hell, even his younger brother Henry, but you, you're...
Abraham shook his head slowly, mulling over his choice of words.
You're a disappointment, Joss. Full of too much emotion. You'll feel every kill, likely empathize with the monsters we're hunting, and endanger your fellow slayers. I don't want you here. Even with your advanced physical skills, those are not enough. But the society insists that we take down the hive in this area, so I have to train you to fight and teach you how to survive. There's simply no one else available to assist us. Your name, to put it plainly, was next on the list.
Joss folded his arms in front of him, feeling every eye in the room weighing heavily on him. So much for his uncle's empathy.
What if I don't want to be here? What if I don't want to train? What if I'd rather just go home and forget about all this vampire stuff?
Several slayers exchanged glances, as if they knew something that Joss didn't, but should. It was unnerving. Abraham leaned forward, a dark dare gleaming in his eyes.
Go, if that's what you want. But you'll never have vengeance for Cecile. And by allowing that monster to live, you will condemn others to her fate. Plus, if you tell anyone about any of this and upset the delicate balance of silence that we have maintained for over 200 years, the Slayer Society will be on your heels. Keeping the knowledge of the existence of vampires to ourselves protects mankind, and we will protect that silence with our lives, and with yours, if necessary.
Joss gulped. Abraham nodded.
Besides, Elysia already knows about you, I guarantee it. Once you leave the training grounds, they'll view you as a threat. Your life will be forfeit. Creatures like that have no morals against killing a child. That you should know already.
Oh, he knew. Joss knew all about what vampires were capable of.
What's Elysia?
After a moment of silence, Cyrus chimed in. It's what they call themselves. Vampire kind. Collectively, they're known as Elysia. Joss sat in silence for several minutes, taking this all in. It was a whirlwind of information, and he wasn't exactly sure he was up for the job of vampire killer extraordinaire. After all, he'd only seen death once. Would he be capable of bringing death onto another living thing? And if he wasn't, would he be killed? The idea sent a frightened shiver up his spine. Calming that shiver was the promise he'd made to Cecile. He would avenge her death, no matter what, even if it killed him.
What's purification?
He asked again. Abraham sat back in his seat, seemingly content that the matter of Joss leaving had been settled in favor of him staying.
We bring certain ideas with us into the society. Ideas that must be removed before training can begin. The ideas that comfort is a necessity, kindness is deserved, and that generosity is to be expected. The world is a harsh, cruel place. You must learn this so that you may face our enemies with strength, independence, and certainty.
Cyrus sat forward, his tone reassuring. The purification part of your training is about tearing you down so that we can build you up renewed. It'll be hard. At times it will feel an insurmountable task, but we've all been through it. You can do this, Joss, if you set your mind to it. Survival begins inside the mind, inside your spirit. It takes commitment. Abraham continued as if Cyrus had never interrupted.
For 3 days, you'll be given nothing but water twice a day, no food. You'll also be on watch for that duration of time, no sleep. You'll be exposed to the elements the entire time and to any vampires who may find you. No shelter, no weapons. If you survive, you can begin training. Or leave. The choice is yours. If you don't survive, I'll inform your parents that you wandered deep into the woods, became lost, and perished. The Slayer Society has made all the arrangements to back up my story, as is custom.
Joss's jaw almost hit the floor. How could one organization be that powerful? And how could his own uncle expect so much out of him, especially to join a group he didn't know enough about yet? If it weren't for Cecile, he wouldn't have gotten on that train in the first place. But he had gotten on the train. He had made a choice to do whatever he could to avenge his baby sister's untimely death. There was no going back now. Patty shook her head.
Is that really necessary, Abraham? He's just a boy. Do we really need to threaten him with what will come if he dies during training?
Abraham shot her a look that said yes, that Joss needed to know every grisly detail. Then he leaned forward, meeting his nephew's eyes.
You may wonder why the Society would risk losing a Slayer in such difficult training measures when there are so few of us. The truth is, we used to lose more just by sending them out on missions. By putting a Slayer to the test, we actually save lives. You may die, or you may live. That's up to you.
Joss swallowed again, his throat feeling tight, and said,
When does my purification begin?
Abraham smiled. But it was not the smile of an uncle to his nephew, or even the smile of a decent human being to a stranger. It was a smile of superiority, full of knowledge beyond anything that Joss could currently understand.
It begins now.
Chapter 7. The Purification Begins. The woods were thick, and Joss found himself breathing heavily as he tromped his way up the millionth hill, following Malik deeper and deeper into the forest, higher and higher up the mountain. If nothing else, he was grateful that it wasn't Abraham leading him to the watchpoint. His uncle had insisted it be Malik, and Joss wasn't about to argue or question Abraham's authority. He'd save his questions for when it was really important. He wasn't sure when that would be, but he knew the time would come. As he followed Malik over the crest of the hill, the terrain evened out some and Malik came to a halt at long last. Malik was barely breathing heavily. It was as if the trek was well known to him, and such physical feats were nothing. Meanwhile, Joss was scratching his head, trying to figure out why he could run away from anyone without having to stop to catch his breath, but trekking up a mountain after Malik was tiring. Then he realized it was because Malik was a slayer and had special skills, too. He also supposed that was because when he was running, it was something he wanted to do. And this wasn't exactly on his wish list of ways to spend his summer vacation. He wanted to avenge his sister, yes, but he wasn't looking forward to 3 days without food, shelter, or protection. The woods scared him. The possibility of vampires in the woods scared him even more.
This is it, Malik grumbled, his eyes sweeping over the small, overgrown clearing. If you look down the mountain, you can see the cabin. Our job is to keep watch. Make certain no vampires approach. We can't have them discovering one of the training facilities. If we see one, we kill it. So if the time comes, you'd better man up, boy.
The hairs on the back of Joss's neck stood on end as hot anger flushed over him. Malik had no right to judge him. Malik didn't even know him. Malik shook his head and laughed, slapping Joss on the shoulder. Through a grin, he said,
My best impersonation of your uncle. You hungry?
Joss paused a moment, not certain he exactly understood Malik's humor, but he was relieved it had been a joke of some type.
Starved.
The smile slipped from Malik's face, morphing into a pout.
Me too. But technically you can't eat, so what are we going to do about that, kid?
Joss very much wanted to say, feed me, but he held his tongue and looked around the clearing. Malik shoved his thumbs into his pockets and looked around, too, sighing.
Well, I guess I can show you a little about tracking. Get your mind off food, mine too. That stew smelled amazing.
Sorry you couldn't eat before we left, Malik. The guilt weighed on him. Malik's smile returned.
Don't worry about it, kid. You just worry about getting through today, and tomorrow. You worry about getting through that, and so on, and so forth.
We can't all be your superstar, Uncle. Some of us need practice, okay?
Joss's chest felt a bit lighter. He nodded to Malik, who didn't seem like such a bad guy after all.
Okay.
Malik slapped his hands together, their clap echoing into the woods around them.
So, tracking. The first thing you need to know is that tracking is about using all your senses to learn about and locate your prey. Look around you, and you might notice broken branches, footsteps in the dirt, blood from a recent injury. Inhale through your nose, and you might smell a recent campfire, or maybe freshly spilled blood.
Malik paused.
Sorry, it's always blood with these things. You get really tired of seeing it and smelling it.
What does blood smell like?
Rotten and metallic, kid. Rotten and metallic. And when you smell enough of it, you can taste it too.
The Slayer shook his head, as if willing that thought away. Joss couldn't help but wonder what horrors Malik had seen. The blood seemed to haunt him.
Touch things like tree trunks, and you might feel a lingering cool. And listen. That's the most important sense you can use when tracking vampires. Keep your ears open and your wits about you at all times.
A sliver of fear wedged itself into Joss's brain then. It slipped in through the base of his skull with an icy tingle. Malik led him down the trail some and crouched where they saw a pile of deer scat.
It's very important that you remain observant and pay attention to detail. For instance, in order to learn everything we can about this deer, we place a hand over its scat and feel that it's still warm, which means the deer isn't far from here. We can see some pine needles, so we know where it's been by what it's been eating.
Then, much to Joss's horror, Malik picked up a pebble of scat and popped it into his mouth, gesturing for Joss to do the same. Joss looked up and down the trail, hoping he could spot the stupid deer and end their lesson already, but the trail was empty, except for the two of them. Holding his breath, Joss plucked a tiny bit of deer scat from the pile and placed it on his tongue. He immediately spit it out. It was all he could do not to vomit. Malik wore a smirk on his face.
What have you learned from this? What's it taste like?
Joss spat into the grass several more times.
It tastes like crap!
With a chuckle, Malik spit a pebble into his palm. It wasn't scat at all. It was a small stone that had apparently been lying next to the scat. Joss hadn't been watching closely enough.
My young friend, this is a lesson that you will never forget. Attention to detail is everything.
Lesson learned. Joss spat into the grass again.
Can I have some water?
Malik patted him on the back and handed him a bottle of cool water. Joss rinsed his mouth repeatedly until the bottle was empty.
I'll be here between meals and while the sun's up. You're on your own the rest of the time. And so help you if you fall asleep.
Malik's mouth closed into a tight white line.
Not only will Abraham be royally ticked off, but it could jeopardize your training and our lives, kid. Don't let it. And don't think we won't know. A person has a look about them if they haven't been sleeping. I'll see it on your face if you sneak so much as a catnap, and I'll be forced to tell your uncle, even though I'd rather share a nice steak with you and send you off to bed. The society comes first, though, and we can't forget why you are here, okay?
Joss slowly released his breath, and when he spoke, his voice came out eerily calm. Whether or not you believe it, Malik, whether or not any of you believes it, I'm up for this. I can handle anything that comes my way. Malik chuckled and dropped his gear at the base of a large elm tree.
We'll see, kid. We'll see.
Joss hadn't been given any gear at all. No rope, no tent, no tools. After all, this was to be a spiritual journey for him. It was meant to prove that he had what it took to be a slayer, that he was loyal to their cause, and it was meant to purify his soul in some weird way. He was supposed to unlearn everything that life had taught him about empathy and learn a new way of thinking. He wasn't sure how starving in the woods was supposed to teach him any of that, but he was willing to go through the motions to get to the real training. But then, wasn't he training already? Maybe it wasn't hand-to-hand combat, but Joss had already learned some things from Malik, valuable things that he was sure he'd carry into the field with him in the future. He was in training, despite what Abraham had said, and this was only the beginning. Once Malik dug into his bag and proceeded to set up a small tent meant to protect him from any potential rainfall, Joss took a seat at the opposite side of the clearing and watched the so-called cabin below. A bird flew from a tree not far from the cabin, breaking up the monotony of Joss's vision, but after he'd been sitting there for about an hour, Joss's butt had lost most of its feeling and complete boredom had set in. He hadn't been tired until there was nothing to do but sit and stare down the mountain. Now he was exhausted and fighting off a yawn. He couldn't let Malik know his resolve was weakening already. It had only been an hour. What kind of slayer would he make if he couldn't even last an hour in the woods without dozing off? 1 hour turned into two. Two turned into six. And by the time Joss's stomach started grumbling loudly, demanding to be fed, he was well into his 20th yawn. He'd gotten up and walked around the clearing to stay awake, but it wasn't really helping. The woods, while pretty and peaceful, were also incredibly boring. He was almost wishing a vampire would show up so that he'd have something to do, other than watching the cabin and watching Malik watching the cabin, his thoughts perhaps drifting off to memories involving blood. Neither of them spoke, which was probably a good thing, but Joss was quickly tiring of the silence between them. Just as he was about to try his hand at conversation, Malik sighed and took to his feet.
"Time for me to turn in, kid. Sit tight. I should be back before the sun rises. Maybe I'll bring a deck of cards or something."
Joss's heartbeat picked up.
"What do I do if a vampire comes?"
"Kill it."
Joss furrowed his brow, completely enveloped by the enormity of the potential situation his imagination had dreamed up.
"How?"
Malik grinned.
"Any way you can, kid."
He began his descent down the mountain, but turned back suddenly. Joss was sure he was going to give him some clue, some hint at just how to deal with a monstrous fanged creature, but he was wrong. Malik said,
"Hey, kid, you need help, you scream, okay? I mean it."
Then Malik was gone, and Joss was left in the woods, in the dark, alone. It surprised Joss how quickly the temperature dropped once the sun's rays were no longer filtering through the trees. His skin prickled with goosebumps, and after some time, he began to shiver. He hadn't thought to bring a jacket with him. After all, he was spending his summer in upstate New York. He hadn't exactly gotten the impression that it was jacket weather up here in June, but in the mountains, exposed to the elements, without an ounce of food warming his belly, Joss could believe it. His head ached from not having eaten. He felt nauseous and tired, oh so tired. His eyes drooped as he leaned against a tree, and it wasn't long before Joss had to force himself to walk the clearing's perimeter in order to stay awake. Several hours passed before Malik returned, rested with a full belly and a bottle of water for Joss. He tossed the small plastic bottle to Joss and pulled a deck of cards from his pocket, shuffling them as he sat. Joss chugged the water and, though his stomach ached from drinking the cool liquid so fast, his parched throat and dry tongue thanked him profusely. They played several hands of rummy before the sun came up. As Joss was gathering the loose cards back into a deck, he said,
"Can I ask you something?"
"Sure, kid."
"If vampires are such a huge problem, why doesn't anyone on the outside know about them? I mean, there are movies and books and stuff, but no one really believes in them. Why don't we just tell people about them? Warn them, you know?"
Malik smiled and took the deck from Joss's hands.
"People need to be protected, kid. And the sad fact is that most people aren't smart enough to be trusted with the facts. Most people would panic at the knowledge that vampires are real. Then we'd not only have vampires to deal with, but crazy mobs of people too. It's just easier to do our job by keeping them in the dark."
Joss mulled this over for a bit before responding.
"I guess that makes sense. But what if a few people did know? Seems like we could make some money that way. I mean, the society must need funding, right? Wouldn't that be an easy way to raise funds?"
"I like the way you think, kid. But we are not allowed to take private jobs."
Malik grinned and slapped him on the back. "Anyway,
It's time for you to return to your post and keep watch. We are not out here playing around. This is an important part of your training on the road to becoming a better slayer. Less chit-chat. More eyes on those woods. And more importantly, what's lurking within them.
They didn't speak for the rest of the long day, and Joss walked the perimeter of the clearing more times than he could count. Then, as the sun had begun its descent once again, Malik gathered up his gear. As he was doing so, Joss dared to ask him a question that had been burning on the edges of his curiosity since they climbed the mountain.
Hey, Malik, what was your purification like?
Malik shook his head, laughing it off.
Let's just say, you don't want to know, kid.
No, really, what was it like?
Pausing, a momentary serious expression came over playful Malik.
It was pretty rough. I had to be pulled from the mountain and purified the old-fashioned way. With a weep. I don't recommend it.
Joss tried to imagine being whipped by another human being, but couldn't. That wasn't something that happened to real people. It was the stuff of movies, the stuff of books, not real. Without another word, Malik retreated down the mountainside, leaving Joss to fend for himself for a second night. In the dark wilderness, it didn't take long for paranoia to set in. Every cricket's chirp was a vampire. Every breeze through the trees was a vampire. Joss slumped against a tree, his heart beating softly inside his chest, his tongue so dry inside his mouth, his stomach ripe with hunger pains. There had been no vampires, not even a single little sign of the creatures since his purification had begun. He was beginning to think he'd imagined Cecile's murder, as well as the vampire he'd stopped from killing Kat. Maybe he was crazy, and all of this was simply a part of his imaginary world. Maybe everyone, all the slayers even, were part of his imagination too. This thought crept into his hungry, exhausted mind and disappeared again like a whisper. Vampires were real, he knew that much. It was just his lack of food and sleep that was making him wonder such ridiculous things. He watched the sun setting behind the trees, and it wasn't long before darkness took him over. Chapter 8. Picking Flowers. In the distance, Joss could hear someone humming. The sound was soft and sweet and reminded him of home. Though he was certain it had been night just a moment before, daylight filled the clearing now, illuminating every inch of the forest as far as he could see. Standing, Joss followed the lyrical sound of the humming until he came upon a field of wildflowers. A young girl was crouched in the middle of the field, plucking purple flowers from the ground and placing them in the bunch grasped tightly in her left hand. Her blonde curls were pulled up in a ponytail that just barely brushed against her tan skin. She was wearing a yellow sundress that reminded him of the color of his mom's kitchen. He knew the girl, but feared speaking her name out loud, because something was wrong with this scene, but Joss couldn't quite put his finger on what it was.
Cecile? What are you doing out here?
She turned her head to the side at the sound of his voice, but didn't speak. Joss wasn't certain why, but he was relieved to see her cheek clean and tan. When she went back to picking flowers, he crossed the field, daisies bouncing against his ankles as he moved closer to his sister.
Cecile, what are you doing here? Mom wouldn't want you out here, you know? I'm picking flowers, Jossie.
She turned her head to the side again to glimpse her brother. Joss's heart skipped a beat. Something was on Cecile's cheek. A dark line. It looked like blood. Then he remembered. Cecile was dead. She was dead and it was all his fault. He slowed his steps, stopping just a few feet behind her. His fingers were trembling.
Why are you picking flowers, Cecile?